Hello, everyone, and welcome back to an all-new episode of The Financial Confessions. It's me, your host, Chelsea Fagan, founder and CEO of The Financial Diet and woman who loves talking about money. And it's been a while since we've done an episode of TFC that is just getting sort of back to basics, nuts and bolts about getting good with money, saving money, paying down debt, investing, and doing all of the things that we really should be doing to whatever extent it's available to us. But often many of us just don't know how to. We don't know where to start. The numbers can feel really overwhelming. And particularly when we're younger, when we're maybe not earning as much, or we're carrying a lot of debt from school, or we don't really have much to work with generally, it can feel like an absolutely overwhelming task to save anything, let alone, like my guest did today, save six figures by the age of 25. That being said, if you've been watching TFD for any amount of time, you know that getting good with money is not the sort of thing that needs to wait until you have a lot of it, or until you're a certain age, or until you can afford to save a certain amount every month. Having better habits with money is, above all, just putting in place a certain set of practices that apply whether you're working with $10 a month or $10,000 a month. My guest today is someone who really epitomizes embracing that mindset and who has done it to, as I mentioned, the tune of saving and investing $100,000 by the very tender age of 25. She talks a lot on her channel and in her book about all of the different methods and habits and mindset shifts that really allowed her to not only save this amount, but also to change her relationship with money and embrace a lifestyle financially that is both sustainable and enjoyable. My guest today is creator and author Michaela Alaka, and I'm so glad to have her with us today. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat.
Thanks to Quillity for supporting The Financial Confessions. Get life insurance in 10 minutes or less. To learn the who, what's, and why of life insurance, visit Quillity.com/TFC. And thanks to ZocDoc for supporting TFC. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and book doctors who take your insurance and are available when you need them. Go to ZocDoc.com/TFC and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Really excited to have you here. So before we get into it, just to kind of set the scene for our audience, can you quickly tell us a little bit about your relationship to money now, where you started with it, and sort of your money philosophy?
Sure. So my relationship with money has been an ever-evolving process, as I believe it is for most people. I usually say that what spurs the beginning of your financial journey is like some sort of financial distress or situation. And I never actually had an event like that come up in my life. I feel like my passion and focus on personal finance really came to be through working my corporate job after college and just figuring out how to navigate having money, making money, saving money, and enjoying my life, which was a struggle that I really, really, really dealt with when I was like 22 to 24. I did not have a healthy relationship with money. And so as that relationship has evolved, as I've begun to increase my income, make more money, and live in a city that's very expensive, I live in Los Angeles, you know, I've really learned that money is a tool. And that is my philosophy with money. Money is a tool. It enables you to live the life that you want. And getting clear on what you want in your life and defining what your values and priorities are help dictate how you use and approach your money on a day-to-day basis.
And just in terms of kind of where you are financially now, so I mentioned you saved quite a bit of money by 25. You're how old now?
I am 27, turning 28 in about 2 months.
Amazing. Happy early birthday. Are you someone who considers yourself on a path to financial independence? Like, is your goal to kind of save enough that you don't have to work? Or how do you kind of relate to, you know, what is enough when it comes to saving and investing?
Mm-hmm. So that's an excellent question, because I have not actually personally defined that number in my life. I'm very aware of the financial independence movement and retiring early, but as I've gotten to know myself over the last few years, and I think really found an excellent work-life balance and a career that I really enjoy, I don't foresee myself retiring ultra early or like really focusing on reaching financial independence at a defined age. I feel like I'm the type of person who in one way or another will always be working. And when I think about, you know, how I want to use money and what enough is enough is, in an ideal state, eventually I'll reach a point where, you know, I can either be work optional or I can be pursuing other passion projects outside of Break Your Budget. My ultimate goal is to like have a coffee shop, maybe move to a ranch or something in Montana or like in the West and just enjoy my life and have like a quiet life. And I feel like when I'm able to do that is when I'll be financially independent, which could be at 35, 45, 55, 65. I don't know. And I feel like that's something that a lot of people could probably relate to. I see a lot of the financial independence movement online. And while I've thought about it, based off of my own spending habits and like, you know, personality traits, I feel like if I were to give it a number, I would become a little bit too obsessive. And I've worked really hard to not have that obsessive mindset with my money.
Now, when you're kind of teaching people about, you know, forming a better relationship with money and becoming more intentional, are there practices or specific actions that you really recommend that people take kind of first and foremost with their money?
Yeah. So the first thing that I tell people to do is to start keeping a running log of what you're using your money on. So that could be formally in a spreadsheet, or that could be just on the notes app on your phone. What I first started to create a budget and get an understanding of how to even build a budget that made sense for my life, the very first thing I did was every time I spent money, I wrote it down in the notes app on my phone so that I could even gauge, A, how much money am I spending on certain things? Is there a frequency to when I'm spending my money? Am I finding that I'm spending money on things out of habit? And from there, you know, really becoming a little bit more intentional about the purchases that I make. And when you get into the habit upfront of writing things down as you're spending or, you know, right after, maybe at the end of the day, it's essentially like creating a relationship or a synapse between when you spend money and writing it down. And that makes you become much more intentional with how you're using your money, and you'll ultimately be able to change your behavior going forward. So that's the first thing. Once you have a gauge of how you're using your money and you're starting to think about building out a budget that makes sense, I always say you need to establish some sort of weekly financial routine. And this is something that I've ritualized and I talk about often, but there are three steps to doing it. First is tracking and updating your income and expenses. Second is self-reflection, which everybody skips. And the third is making adjustments to your budget going forward that incorporate any changes that you need to make from doing your self-reflection. And having that sort of weekly check-in will keep you on top of your finances, and it almost becomes like a must-do. I find when I skip it, I feel like my finances are completely out of control.
You mentioned that you used to have a much worse relationship with money. Can you talk about kind of how that negative relationship with money manifested and how self-reflection specifically was a part of changing that?
Absolutely. So I used to be, and I have like almost like an OCD tendency. So I'm not diagnosed as obsessive compulsive, but I do have controlling things or like controlling tendencies in my life. And I do feel like that manifested a lot in how I approached my money before I really knew about how money worked and how I could use it to benefit me. And the way that that came to be, or how it, you know, showed up in my life, was I just focused on spending as little money as I possibly could in an effort to save more. And I thought that the only way to reach my financial goals or to be financially successful was to just not spend any money at all, even if it was at the expense of my comfort or if it was at the expense of my social life. So for example, when I first moved out of my parents' house after college and into the city, I lived in Boston, I ended up renting an apartment with a random roommate who I didn't know and spending $900 on my room. But the catch was my room was actually like a glorified closet. It was 9x9. I could only fit my bed in there and a dresser. And I was like, well, I can deal with this because I'm only spending $900 a month on rent. What I didn't realize was not having a space to call my own, not having like a comfortable place to go home to, impacted how I showed up in other areas of my life and ultimately how I chose to spend my money. So that's one example. Other examples would be like not wanting to go out because I didn't want to pay for the Ubers, or not wanting to go out to dinner because I had anxiety about splitting the check with my friends. Like lots of things like that, that I feel like were just really not healthy, especially for someone who I was making a full-time salary. My salary starting at my first job out of college was $62,000. So I was making enough to be able to go out to dinner on a Saturday night and not have crippling fear and anxiety about maybe paying an extra couple of dollars because we split the check evenly and someone else's meal cost $2 more than mine. Like those were the kinds of things that were stressing me out. And that's just not normal and it's not healthy. But if you don't have any idea of what you're looking for in your life, you haven't gotten clear on your financial goals and your priorities, and you haven't learned about how to actually use and allocate your money and balance using your money on essential things, using your money to live your life, but also using your money to reach your financial goals. It's like a synergy. You have to find a balance there. If you haven't learned how to do that, every single expense that you have is going to cause fear because it's like, that's money that I could have had that I'm using on something else. So that was really how originally my relationship with money started in a negative way. When it comes to self-reflection and how that has really helped me, especially implementing it consistently, you know, when I go through my weekly money routines, I do it weekly and I also do it a little bit more in depth on a monthly basis. When I go through these routines, I'm asking myself the same kinds of questions, like, how does this process make me feel? When I was entering in my expenses for the last week, you know, did I have anxiety? Were there any expenses where I'm like, I wish I didn't spend that money? Was there anything that came up unexpected that I could maybe be proactive for next month or next week? Were there any expenses that I feel really good about? And like looking back on it, I'm happy I spent that money. Am I proud of the way I used my money? If somebody else were to look at this, would I be embarrassed by how they viewed how I spent my money? And, you know, those answers change all of the time, but I found the more that I went through this process and really challenged myself to be a little uncomfortable when, you know, I made decisions that maybe didn't benefit me or how I feel, you know, I ended up in my life making different decisions over time. And I think that's the real benefit to self-reflection, is it's how you change your behavior. If you don't bring awareness to what you're currently doing, what is and isn't working, you know, you're never actually going to make the changes you need to make in your life. And now I feel like I have such a grasp on how I spend my money. I have such a grasp on the things that add value to my life, the things that are important to me, that it's very rare that I spend money in a way that doesn't benefit me. And that doesn't mean I'm always comfortable. Like, for example, I recently moved into a new apartment, so I've had to furnish it, and that is very expensive. And that, you know, gave me some financial anxiety, which I was pretty candid about on my channels and on my own podcast. And even though I had that anxiety, I knew inside through doing the self-reflection and through going through this process that, you know, I have the money set aside. I am buying things that add to my value. One of my values is being really comfortable in the place that I live in. And it made me feel a lot better and a lot more in control, even though I was spending a little bit more money than usual. And 3 or 4 years ago, Michaela would not be able to have approached that same situation with such clarity and like emotional control. And so that just goes to show how far I've come just through really thinking about my spending behaviors and acting on them and changing them over the course of a pretty long period of time.
It sounds like in many ways you kind of came to talking about money in a professional capacity for the exact opposite reasons that I did. Like, I would definitely describe my past with money as being the polar opposite. I was overspending. There was nothing I couldn't justify, you know, getting myself into credit card debt, saying yes to everything. And in some ways, I think, I mean, honestly, I think it's not, you know, every situation is unique and there's no one, you know, kind of problem that is easier to solve or what have you. I do think, though, that for people like myself who generally struggle with being able to pare down and say no to things, I mean, one thing that, you know, I have talked about and I think is important for people coming from that side of things is like, I definitely prefer like a pay myself first kind of mentality, in the sense of, rather than having a stringent budget, just kind of, you know, allocating my savings and investments, automating them so I don't even see them, you know, putting my, you know, money in my sinking funds or investing in my projects. And then I know that whatever's left over, I just get to have fun with. And I think for each kind of type of sort of relationship to money or problem that you're in some way trying to solve for, there are overarching strategies that tend to fit those personality types better. I'm interested, is there a specific budgeting approach that you feel like works really naturally to counteract that tendency toward anxiety and over kind of over hoarding of money?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, probably more people, relate to your experience of maybe overspending or saying yes to everything. And as I've sort of shared my story, I have found that there is, I think, two kind of polar extremes of money relationships. One is the overspending and one is the severe underspending. And I think both stem one way or another from some sort of either like underlying anxiety or, you know, past experience. And that's just how it manifests in your life. For me, I think, and I also think this sort of applies to everyone, but it really comes down to finding a system. And I do think there is almost like a formula that can be shape-shifted for most people, depending on how your brain works. And I always put a big emphasis on, you need to find the system that works for your brain, because what works in my brain might not work in your brain. And if you're trying to replicate exactly what I do and it doesn't make sense for you, you're not going to find the success that you're looking for. But the strategy that has really helped me has been to build a zero-based three-bucket budget. And I do this on an annual scale, and then I break it down monthly. I actually have a spreadsheet that I use that gives me like a full picture of my finances for the year. And the reason why I love this method is because it can be adjusted based off of how detailed or high level you want to be. So a zero-based budget is when every dollar you're earning is allocated towards an expense, a financial goal, or a non-essential expense, in that order. And it goes down. Those are the three buckets, right? And that's sort of how they embed into each other. And so as much money as you're earning in income, subtract those three categories, you get down to zero. The way that you can make this really detailed, which is my personal preference, would be within your essential expenses. So that's category number one or bucket number one. You know, you're listing out all of the different things you're spending money on. Then we get into your financial goals, which you can define really clearly, or you can set up automatic transfers, whatever works. And then we get into your non-essentials, which are the last layer. And that's essentially everything you have left after you've taken care of your initial essential priorities and your financial goals. So I think that sort of weaves into the paying yourself first mentality of, I'm taking care of those things before I'm deciding how much money I have left over for fun. And then, you know, if you want to be more detailed, you can allocate that out for money for restaurants, money for going out, money for travel, money for gifts. Or you can just say, you know, I have $500 after I take care of all of the other stuff to use on whatever the heck I want. And I think following this strategy is really effective because it makes you first very intentional about how you're using your money, because you do, one way or another, have to define how much you have going towards your essential expenses. You need to make sure you're making enough to cover those. Two, you do need to define your financial goals. You need to think about, how am I going to make sure this money gets where it needs to go? So that, again, could be a manual transfer, or it can be an automatic transfer, depending on how hands-on or hands-off you want to be. And then when it comes down to your non-essential or like fun money, you know, you have to think about, okay, is this enough for me to feel like I'm able to live my life? And the answer is either going to be yes, it's more than enough, I could probably even maybe put more towards my goals, or no, it's not enough, and I need to think about, what's the strategy here that I'm going to implement to get to a place where I can feel more comfortable? That could be extending the timeline on your financial goals. That could be looking for ways to reduce your essential expenses, or it could be looking for ways to increase your income so you have a little bit more flexibility. So that's the first benefit. But the second benefit is, you can no longer treat your savings and investments and debt payoff as like whatever's left over at the end of the month. This is something I see often, is people will be like, well, after all of my expenses, I only have $200 left over to put towards my goal. And it's like, well, no, we need to reframe the way that you're thinking about that, to put your financial goals, whatever they may be, above the expenses that you don't need to spend. And that's how you pay yourself first. That's how you get really clear on what you're actually doing to reach your financial goals and make sure that they're a priority. And then whatever's left over is what you have for your fun money, for your non-essential expenses. I like to think of it almost as a puzzle, right? So everything sort of has to fit together optimally for you to find this perfect system for you. And it takes time. And, you know, maybe up front, you're really detailed and you're in the nitty gritty and you find your cadence. And then you can sort of let loose a little bit more and maybe not track things as closely, or not allocate things, or just have, I have $1,000 for essentials, $500 for my goals, $500 for my fun money. And once you hit those limits, you know, you've hit them. So I think it just depends on how deep you want to go, and that's personal preference. But following that broader framework will bring awareness to where your money is going first, and then you can optimize as you go.
As both a business owner and a person who wants to make sure that the people I love are taken care of if anything were to happen, life insurance has been a conversation that I've been having in my own personal life as of late. And being financially savvy, as you all know, means planning ahead for future you. Life insurance is an important part in financial planning because it helps make sure your loved ones are taken care of in the future. If you know life insurance is an important investment but are not sure where to start, Quility has you covered. Quility offers a completely digital quoting and purchasing experience with various 101 guides to guide you through the process. Quility's process covers how much you need, when you need it, and for how long. What people actually think costs over $50 a month can actually cost $20 a month, less than your car insurance, pet insurance, and probably less than a dinner out. To learn the who, what's, and why of life insurance, visit Quility.com/TFC.
I want to take a quick pause and thank today's sponsor, ZocDoc. If there's one thing you should actually take the time to do, it's find yourself a good doctor, whether it's for your mental health, your yearly checkup, or a new dentist because you're still going to the same one from your childhood and realize you don't actually like them. Finding the right doctor should not be an overwhelming task. It should actually be the opposite. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and book doctors who are patient reviewed, take your insurance, are available when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun. Instead of going to TikTok for medical advice, no shade because you know I love TikTok, it's just not where I nor you should be seeking out medical advice, I use ZocDoc, literally, I personally do use it, to find the right medical professionals, and you should too. Like I said, I actually use ZocDoc, and honestly, it has been really, really helpful to just keep that entire part of my life totally organized, as it's something that can easily feel overwhelming and become an item on your to-do list that just kind of lingers there forever and gives you anxiety. ZocDoc is honestly the goat. And if for whatever reason you're not feeling your best, finding the right care shouldn't take up all your time and energy. That's where ZocDoc comes in to help. Using their free app that millions of users rely on, you can find the right doctor that meets your needs and fits your busy schedule. Here in New York City, some doctors are booked up for weeks, if not months in advance, and that's not particularly helpful when you have something that needs timely attention. With ZocDoc, you can book an appointment with a few taps in their app and choose from thousands of patient-reviewed doctors and specialists, browse doctor profiles, upload and verify your insurance information, and get the care you need in one place. Go to ZocDoc.com/TFC and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then book a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours. That's ZocDoc.com/TFC. ZocDoc.com/TFC. Another area where I think a lot of it has to be kind of philosophically slash emotionally driven in terms of finding what is the right approach for you is sort of the dichotomy between saving more aggressively and earning more aggressively. You know, again, to sort of frame it through, you know, how I approach money, I am someone who knows myself well enough to know that I always prefer to earn more as I can, like in whatever way is possible for me to do, than to save more. Both because I find it more motivating, but also because, quite frankly, like, I'm an indulgent little girl. So I like to do a lot of indulgent things that cost money. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, obviously, there's always going to be limits to either end of that, right? Like there's only going to be so much that anyone can earn. There's only going to be so much that anyone can continue to save. And there are also obviously some constraining factors in different lives and situations that inhibit people from necessarily earning more. For example, I don't have children and don't want to. So that obviously gives me a lot more time in the day to work with to direct toward earning potential. But similarly, I also live in a very high cost of living city. So like a lot of saving opportunities that might be available to someone in a low cost of living area aren't necessarily available to me. So kind of setting aside, you know, the constraints that each individual life will have as it pertains to earning more and saving more, what is your philosophy as far as finding that right balance, but also kind of deciding what the right sort of tilt between the two is for yourself, but also for just any individual?
Yeah, well, I think, and again, I think it really boils down to personal preference. And like when it comes to earning more, usually that comes with some degree of a trade-off. And so this sort of comes back into our career and our, you know, what do we want our lives to look like and what's the lifestyle that we're looking to have? And the topic of earning potential is actually something that I spend a lot of time thinking about because I do get a lot of questions around, what if I hate my job, but I'm getting paid well? Or, you know, should I pursue my passion versus making more money? And it comes with whatever phase of your life you're in and how you want to balance making money and being happy. And I don't think they have to be one or there doesn't have to be one or the other, right? You can have both, but there are going to be trade-offs. So let's say, you know, your goal is to make as much money as possible. And to do that, you know, you have a full-time job, maybe you have a side hustle and you don't have a lot of free time, but you're earning a lot of money. That could be the season of life that you're in. That's okay. Or, you know, maybe your goal currently is to enjoy your job, like clock in at 9, sign out at 5 and live your life outside of there, whether that be pursuing passions that you can monetize or just like hanging out and relaxing and having a nice life. You know, there is going to be those seasons. I don't necessarily think for the majority of people and myself included from my experience, like it is really hard to have a high earning job and not have to work a lot. Through my business, at least, like I'm a high earner at this point, but I do work the same or more than I used to in a corporate job. And I think there's this myth of like, if you work what you love, you know, you'll never work a day in your life. And I agree and disagree with that. Like there's still elements of having a business that are work that I don't want to do, which I'm sure you deal with as well, running your own business. But you know, I'm in this phase of life where I'm trying to make as much money as possible. I'm willing to make those sacrifices. And so I think that really boils down to what phase of life you're in. Are you willing to make the trade-off to make more money? Because there is always going to be a trade-off. And if so, how far are you willing to go? Because early in your 20s, I think throughout your 20s and even into your early 30s, before you have a lot of obligations that, you know, maybe you choose to get married or you choose to have a family or you choose to buy a home and then you have a mortgage and you have all of these requirements that sort of force you to work. If you're in your early 20s or your 20s or your early 30s, like use that time to build up the foundation to save as much as you can so that in a little while, when you have those obligations, maybe you don't feel completely chained to a job. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's sort of the philosophy that I take when it comes to making more money to save more money. There's going to be that trade-off, and you have to understand and decide, like, how far are you willing to go, really?
Well, I definitely agree that looking at it in terms of seasons is a really important mentality. I think for most people, and I'm sure there's data that backs this up, I don't have it on hand, but people are generally capable of pushing hard for a limited time window, especially if they know that it's limited. And I do think that, you know, one thing that not enough people think about, and that I know the data bears it out, is that people don't change employers enough for, you know, first of all, just realizing those larger increases in compensation, which I always stress, like sometimes there are employers that are really, really aggressive about making sure that your compensation increases are keeping pace with what you're worth in the broader market. But most employers are not, and you are typically going to be not earning as much at an employer than you would elsewhere if you've been there for more than a few years. So that is an important thing to be, you know, always kind of checking up on, just in terms of your negotiating power and your earning at your primary job. But it's also, I think, an important mentality to keep in terms of if you go into most jobs knowing that, you know, barring it being an amazing situation that you never want to leave, you're probably going to only be there for a few years. I think that does help just in terms of your outlook on it, your ability to push through if it's, you know, maybe something that's earning you a good amount of money but you don't love. In every respect, I think keeping that critical distance from your employer, remembering and understanding that most work situations should be temporary to some extent and that you are not going to be in this forever. And it also, I think, gives a lot of important leverage back to the person in the job, because I think, you know, we often tend to forget that most employers, like, if they need to save money, they will not hesitate to lay you off. You know, they're not your friends, they're not your family. And I think, you know, when we think about our professional lives and how they serve us and how they fit into our lives and what we're getting out of them, keeping that seasonal look at things also helps put in perspective that your commitment to any given job should only be insofar as it is serving you.
Absolutely. And, you know, on the topic of jobs and careers and your employer not hesitating to let you go if they need to save money, I think, you know, we've seen that happen a lot over the last year to a year and a half. And at the end of the day, like, your jobs are always, or your career is always going to be seasonal, but there are a handful of things that you have within your control to use, as you mentioned, as some degree of leverage to sit in the driver's seat of your life and make sure that you have, if you're in a phase where you want to earn more, you know, you can act on that. And if you're in a phase where you kind of want to take a step back and relax, you can do that as well. And it boils down to transferable skills and value and adding value in the workplace, not only to advocate for yourself to make more money or to earn a higher salary, but also to keep sort of as your own toolkit for leveraging when you are looking for a new job, if you get laid off, if you're looking to make a career switch. Maybe you're in a career path that's not super lucrative or not as lucrative as you'd want it to be, and you don't have necessarily the hard skills to get into the career path that you want, but you do have soft skills, transferable skills, prior projects or prior work you can leverage as examples. I always say you should be task tracking at work, and for all of the work at a high level, the projects that you're doing, mapping the value add of each project to what you're actually bringing to the table. So let's say you're working on some sort of project at work. Who is that impacting? What skills are you learning? How is it driving the business forward? Who is that work going to enable a business decision? These are all value adds to what you have going on at work that you can put on your resume, use as examples in interviews, use to advocate for a raise or a promotion, and to identify transferable skills that you can then use to get hopefully a new job that pays you more or that's aligned with the lifestyle that you're looking for. So even if you're in a season where maybe you're not super happy with the direction that you're going, or you're feeling a little lost at work, there are ways to take that power back. And I think that's one of the most important things you can do in the workplace, especially in the economy right now, where I think a lot of employees just feel totally powerless. And that's leading to, I think, a big movement in starting a business and having a side hustle and not really knowing where to start or how to go about it. But there is just like this underlying stress about like, what the heck am I going to do with my life if I get laid off and I can't find another job?
So we got a lot of audience questions from Michaela. So I'm just going to go through a few of them. Starting with one from a society member, which says, any tips for someone who has a fair amount of investment assets, but whose daily income from work isn't much, but who still wants to both save money and live their life?
So if you're somebody who has a lot of assets, you're already a couple of steps ahead of the average person. But if you're in a position where maybe you're not earning a ton of money, you know, limited income does mean you need to approach your finances a little bit differently than having some more disposable income, right? So my first recommendation would be to really build out a clear zero-based three-bucket budget and understand where your money is going. Knowing how much money you have to work with for your financial goals to add to that ever-growing asset pool that you already have is key. But if your goal as well is to like really enjoy living your life and find that balance, you need to know how much money you have to work with on those things, first and foremost. But second, I would really encourage you to think about what are the things that add value into your life and how can you align your spending with those things. So think about what are the times you've spent money where you felt really good? How do you like to enjoy your time? What are the things that make you feel really good, whether they're tangible or experiences? And see if the way you're currently spending your money is aligned with that. Because more often than not, people who feel like they don't have a high income or they feel like they don't have enough money to balance saving, investing, as well as living their lives are usually just spending their money, you know, out of alignment, which I feel like I've said a lot, but it's true. Are you spending your money on your friends' hobbies? Are you spending your money on things, physical items that are just collecting dust in your closet or in your home? Like really, really think about how you're using that disposable income that you do have and see if there are inefficiencies that you can adjust and, you know, rejigger to make yourself a little bit happier and that are adding value into your life.
This person asks, what are your best tips to pay down high interest credit cards or loans?
Yeah, so high interest debt is a scary thing. And if you are somebody who has a high or you have credit card debt, my very first tip would be to make sure that you are not continuing to use that credit card. Stop putting things on it because the more you spend, the more and more interest you're going to accrue, even if you're trying to pay it down and putting additional money towards it. So that would be tip number one, switch to cash if you're able to. My other tip for this, especially with high interest debt, would be to make sure you have at least a crisis fund or a small buffer for emergencies. When I'm thinking about order of operations for financial goals, an emergency fund comes at the top because if you have credit card debt that you're trying to pay off, and then you have an emergency, you may not have any other option but to put the emergency on your credit card and put yourself in a worse situation. So having an emergency fund or crisis fund, which I define as like $1,000 to at least buffer if something were to happen, is really, really key. And then beyond that, you're paying off your credit card debt really should be the highest priority goal that you're working towards. And it could mean putting some of your other goals on a temporary pause to pay it off. But the longer you let that go, the more that you add to it, the harder and harder and harder it's going to be to get out of it. So if you focus, let's say 6 months or a year where you're throwing the majority of your financial goal money towards paying off that credit card while you're also simultaneously not putting anything on it and keeping your expenses trim, you'll get out of it a lot faster than if you were, you know, investing a ton of money or paying off other debt or not really paying as close attention to it. So those would be my best tips for credit card debt. It's not a fun problem to have, but it is something you can get out of quickly with some extra TLC.
How do you bounce back from a major financial setback as an adult?
That's a really good question. Let me think about it for a sec, because I want to give like a couple of actionable tips.
I have had some major financial setbacks over my adult life, major and minor, and especially having, you know, owning a small business over the course of almost a decade, like there have been some real toughies on a personal level, on a professional level, what have you. Sometimes you're dealing in really serious numbers, can be really, really scary stuff. But the number one thing that I always remind myself of is any mental or emotional energy that is spent in any capacity on something that is already done or out of your control is entirely wasted. There are only productive things that you can do. Whatever cards you're left holding after this setback are the cards you can work with. But anything that has to do with, look at all that money I lost, look at this opportunity I lost, look at this thing that happened, I should already be X or doing X or Y by now. Like anything that has to do with things that have already happened and can't be changed or things that are outside of your control are complete wastes of time and energy and will only be negative. So will be a net negative for your life and for your mental health. So if you find yourself, like if you are not focusing on what is productive and what you can actually do to, you know, recover from it financially and put yourself in a better position, if any of what you're dealing with is that emotional turmoil from stuff that's already done or stuff that's out of your control, get thee to a therapist, because what you're talking about now is a mental and emotional health issue that you're not going to be able to reason your way out of. You're not going to be able to math your way out of it. And that's when you need to start dealing with it in the way that people deal with grief and the way that they deal with trauma, because in a lot of cases, a major financial setback is also traumatic and it's also can also coincide with grief. And you have to deal with it as the emotional and mental problem that it is, separate from the plans that you will be making financially to recover and to shore yourself up, which are going to vary depending on the situation, but which are generally going to be the, you know, good financial advice that you're practicing, you know, kind of no matter where you are financially.
Absolutely. I love that perspective and tip. And just to add to it quickly, I am actually reading this book right now called Deep Work by Cal Newport. And one of the points that he makes is that your life is a product of whatever you decide to focus your attention on. And the most happy and fulfilled lives are of people who have really controlled what they're able to focus their attention on a regular basis and choose to focus their attention on certain things or give their energy to certain things. And I think if you're in a situation where you are facing some degree of financial setback, you have two choices. You can choose to move forward and focus your energy on getting out of the situation, which we'll talk about, or you can choose to focus on the negative and your whole world becomes this, I've had this financial setback and it's ruined my life and I'm a victim to these problems. And getting into that mind space, as you mentioned, can be incredibly detrimental. So I think choosing the first tip, adding to what you said, would be to focus your attention on being productive to move forward from it, because you can't change it if it's already happened. My second tip would be to take inventory of what else is going on in your financial sphere, because oftentimes, and in certain instances, like, yes, the financial setback is completely dramatic and life altering, but I think in a lot of instances as well, it might just be a blip on the radar in the grand scheme of your life. And you can navigate your way out of it by understanding what you have left to work with. So that would be my second tip. And my third tip would be, going back to what I've said a bunch of times, is to build out a budget. And I know that that doesn't work for everybody's brains, but the beauty of having a zero-based three-bucket budget is it lays your finances out on paper in a visual way. So you can actually see how you're using your money and where it's going. And if you're trying to, let's say, rebuild an emergency fund or pay off a really high credit card bill or whatever the situation is, if you don't know where your money is going and how it's being used, you can't actually make any tangible changes that are going to have an impact on what you're doing. So creating a budget like that is really key. You can also create a money map, which basically lays out your current financial system. So like when money gets deposited into your accounts from, you know, your job or whatever your source of income is, where is it going? Is it sitting there currently? Is it all being deducted out for your bills? Do you not have any idea if any of it's even moving towards your various goals? Really think about that and draw it out, because that will also help frame up how to create some sort of budget or plan that will get you out of it. But those would be my three tips. So focusing your energy and moving forward. The second tip was taking a snapshot and inventory of what's currently going on. And then the third tip is creating that budget to actually get yourself forward and out of it.
Michaela, it's been so wonderful speaking to you. You have so many really amazing and thorough tips on so many different aspects of managing money. And it's refreshing and nice to have one of these like really old school financial wellness episodes where we kind of get a little bit back to basics. But I know for a lot of people at home, they're just kind of starting out their financial journey. So a lot of this is really, really helpful. Where can people go to find more of the work that you do?
Sure. You can find me at Break Your Budget on all social media platforms, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. You can go to breakyourbudget.com. I have tons of resources and free guides, free downloadable guides. And I also have a brand new book. It's called Own Your Money. I will show it on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Currently, it's available for pre-order. If you're listening to this after June 20th, it will be available for purchase. So if you want to learn about money mindset, building a budget, creating a plan, advocating for yourself in the workplace, you should definitely check it out.
This will indeed be airing after June 20th, so you can go pick it up right now.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much again for being here, Michaela, and thank you guys all at home for tuning in. I will see you next Monday on an all-new episode of The Financial Confessions. Bye, guys.
Thanks for having me.